This is Past Their Prime with Jesse Martineau.
Yeah, I'm going to try not to use cuss words.
And Lee Lubarsky.
All right, how about that?
And now, with absolutely zero preparation, let's start the show.
Greetings and welcome to episode 10 of Past Their Prime. Along with Jesse Martineau, this is Lee Lubarsky. And Jesse, we're in the thick of things now.
We are. We seem to both be talking while fighting through distractions of the Celtics Heat ongoing right now. And
yeah.
We record this on Monday evenings, and there's a pretty good basketball game going on as we speak.
It's a very good basketball game, and as bad as the delay is between the two of us on this podcast, I think it's even worse with me watching the game in New York and you watching it in Philadelphia. So I'm going to try to contain my excitement and or displeasure in the hopes that it does not, A, ruin the podcast, or B, ruin your viewing experience of the game.
Yeah, because one thing we've noticed already is that you are clearly seeing things way before I do. And it's a good thing that we're both nothing but professional when it comes to this podcast.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I would think nothing else. That's we both have degrees in broadcasting. And, you know, we know how to manage a podcast and how to broadcast with the utmost of professionalism.
Just like Andrew Bynum.
Exactly like Andrew Bynum, which is a great way to bring into our first segment, Jesse.
Yes.
The NBA playoffs.
The NBA playoffs.
I'm assuming you had nothing else to do yesterday at 3 o'clock, and you sat down to watch the Laker game, because, frankly, if I were a mother, that would have been the best Mother's Day present ever.
Yeah, I'm sure Andrew Bynum's mom's super proud.
Super proud of him. I guess, as he had been talking before the series had ended and basically calling out his teammates. I'm assuming he just decided he had had enough of playing with his teammates and wearing his Lakers jersey, because it's quite possible that was the last time he ever will don a Los Angeles Lakers jersey.
To me, the whole thing is just so completely ridiculous as I was watching it. I could not believe what I was seeing. First of all, the biggest cheap shot hit I think I've ever seen in my life in sports. I mean, that was such a joke. And then he struts off, like, as soon as he does it, he starts to strut off and flips off his jersey like he's some kind of tough guy. Dude, slow your roll here, champ. You just knocked down a guy who is over a foot shorter than you, weighs over 100 pounds less than you did, and you waited until he elevated so he couldn't defend himself. And now you're all walking off like you're a big tough guy. You got to be kidding.
I think that's the one thing I remember, you know, playing, again, I'm not a professional basketball player by any stretch of the imagination. I did play basketball in high school. I didn't play high school basketball, but I played basketball in high school. And I remember the one thing, because I was a bit of a defensive specialist, I believe is the term, for someone who doesn't know how to score and can only play defense. I was a little too over-aggressive, and I remember my coach would, you know, was always happy for me to be aggressive and for me to play tough defense. But the one thing they always instilled in us, and this is back, you know, going back into high school, and I know that there are even before high school and in elementary school teams that are taught this as well. If someone is in the air, they are the most vulnerable ever. And I don't care who you are, I don't care what's going on in the game. That's an absolute no-no to foul someone in the air when they are absolutely defenseless. If they fall down on the ground, they very easily could break a bone or worse.
Yeah, and he came after him, elbows flying. And it's hilarious, because if you saw him in the post-game press conference, he was completely unapologetic. He was completely proud of what he had just done. He thought he was so tough, you know, that he had sent some type of message. You know, like, who are you kidding? What in the hell is wrong with you? I just lost complete respect. I mean, any respect that I had for him, first of all, he's on the Lakers, so I don't have a lot to begin with. But any respect I did have for that clown, they just completely gone.
Yeah, I think if you are looking to send a message, it's a message that, like, you're a great guy to have on the team. And, I mean, I don't know if it's a matter of being frustrated or what, but, I mean, guys, you're down 3-0 in the series. And at that point, they were down by 30 points, if not more.
Yeah,
and for Lamar Odom and then Andrew Bynum getting ejected 45 seconds apart, like, guys, come on. I mean, I don't want to, you know, well, I will, but I don't want to disparage Phil Jackson. Or I don't want to disparage the leadership qualities or leadership capabilities of Kobe Bryant, but someone's got to call a timeout and get everyone's head in the game.
Can I do that? Can I disparage Phil Jackson?
Go right ahead if you'd like to.
Yeah, I've been pretty annoyed at this whole Phil Jackson is the greatest coach in the history of professional North American sports. That's what Mike Woolly Buns said on Part of the Interruption today. And I think that is just a complete joke. I don't know. Maybe you haven't tuned in to this last series, Woolly Buns. But it seems to me that we're looking at a team that was more talented than their opponent, which the Lakers were. I don't care what anybody says. Had home court advantage in this series, and yet got swept. And the team didn't even compete in game four. An elimination game. They completely didn't even bother to show up. They showed zero poise, played with little legitimate toughness, and had tons of infighting amongst the team. They looked like a bunch of angry seventh graders at the end. You know, completely unprofessional. I mean, the team never, ever even once made a defensive adjustment. And now, despite that, I mean, those are all things that point directly at a head coach. Head coach is unable to do anything about any of those things. And yet you're telling me this guy is the best coach in the history of professional sports? That's unbelievable. That is completely a joke.
Yeah. I think the other thing, too, that a lot of people, when they cite this, you know, Phil Jackson being the greatest coach, he's won NBA championships wherever he's gone. He's also had a great starting cast and a great team wherever he's gone. This is not a guy that built a team that didn't build the Chicago Bulls from the ground up. You know, when you have Michael Jordan, you can put a bunch of jabronis around him, and you're probably going to win a championship once in a while. I'll give you the same thing with in Los Angeles. You had Kobe Bryant and some guy named Shaquille O'Neal, who, despite what's going on in the current NBA, the Eastern Conference semis right now, used to be a really good basketball player. The fact of the matter is, like, he's never really had a team that hasn't been great. And for him to do great things with great players, yes, it's commendable. It's fantastic that you're able to get the most out of all of your players by having them read the Tao of Poo. But frankly, Phil Jackson, you're not Red Auerbach. And I know I'm a homer and I know I'm a Celtics fan, but you're not Red Auerbach.
Yeah, and I think, personally, Phil, I'm not going to just say he's not a great coach, because he is a great coach. So I'm not going to claim otherwise. But I just refuse to believe that if you are the number one, I mean, there's been a lot of different sports and a lot of different coaches in all these sports. If you are the number one top of that list of all time, there's no way your team shows up with the effort that we just saw.
Sorry. Not even show up with an effort. They didn't show up.
I'm not buying it at all. When they're fighting amongst each other, I mean, you get the two best players, apparently Kobe and Gasol aren't even talking to each other, and they're playing like a bunch of bitches. I mean, you've got to be kidding me.
You're absolutely right. And then you look at like that team, it's not even like a group of guys who are rookies or a group of guys who are playing together for the first time. This is a team that won the NBA championship last year with pretty much the same team. I don't know what goes on in that locker room, and frankly, I never will. I'm not an NBA head coach. I'm not an assistant on that team. Maybe this is something that Brian Shaw, who likely will take over the reins for Phil Jackson, will be able to get through, and he'll be able to show us, you know, what was going on in that locker room. He'll be able to harness the negative energy and somehow turn this team around, because, Jesse, this is an absolute nightmare, and if I'm Phil Jackson, the worst possible way I could ever want to end my career.
But the thing is, to me, I know you brought up Brian Shaw, and everybody just kind of assumes that he's the guy that's going to be the replacement. But I'm starting to question whether or not that's legitimately going to be the case. I mean, he was around for this collapse. He was in the locker room. Clearly, he was not able to do anything about the collapse at the end. You know what I mean? Clearly, he was not able to come up with a possible solution adjustment to what's happening on the defensive end for that team. So, I mean, something has to change. And I don't think it could be the roster. If you look at their starting five plus Odom, whatever, they're all back this year. They're all under contract. So they're all going to be around. So they can't do anything about any of those guys. So something has to give. And I would not be shocked if they brought in somebody from the outside to coach the team.
You're right. And with Brian Shaw has been named the front runner, but you're right. With him around, I don't know how Mitch Kupchak can't say, like, someone had to do something in this locker room. The other question is, though, was it beyond the control of Phil Jackson to get this team rallied around? Because this is not a problem that just started in game four. This is a problem that started in game three, and you had Andrew Bynum starting to talk a little smack and call his team and air his dirty laundry in public about his teammates. And frankly, like, maybe it's just a matter of having to demolish this team, start rebuilding around Kobe Bryant, or I don't know what.
Yeah. Well, I think the answer that we're going to see for the Lakers is they're going to make a big run to try to trade for Dwight Howard. And I would not be shocked if he goes there, and that would really ruin my day if he does, because he's a terrific player. And him playing with Kobe It would be nasty. And the scary part about it, the whole thing, actually, I'm depressing myself as I'm talking about it. It's one of the situations that might actually make sense for both teams. The trade everybody's talking about is sending Bynum and Odom to Orlando in exchange. And obviously Orlando's not getting back what they would be giving up, not even close. But the fact is that if you are the Orlando Magic, you see what happened to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you realize you're not going to get Dwight Howard to come back. Dwight Howard wants to be in a much bigger venue. He wants to be in a much bigger city. He wants more spotlight. He wants to be in a place where he can win year in and year out. That's not going to happen in Orlando. L.A. seems to be the perfect fit, especially because the player Kobe, who would obviously still be there. So I think it makes sense for both teams to actually make that trade. You know, we'll just have to see what happens. I really hope it doesn't work out that way.
Yeah, I mean, as a Celtics fan and someone who likes a little bit of parity in the NBA, I mean, I was looking at this today, the fact that I hadn't even realized that the big three of the Miami Heat, Chris Bosh, and we'll get to the series in a second, but Chris Bosh, Dwight Howard, Dwayne Wade, rather, and that other guy that used to play in Cleveland.
Joe James.
The three of them were all within the first five picks of the same draft year. I mean, it's a pretty impressive thing when you've got the three out of the top five picks. One of those picks, again, or the other two being Carmelo Anthony and, you know, the Darko Milicic experiment. But
that's right.
The three out of the top five picks are all on the same team. You know, it doesn't say a lot for parity in the NBA, but I would love to see, you know, him stay with Orlando. But again, I'd, you know, love to get him out of the Eastern Conference. But yeah, Los Angeles, you're right, would be a good fit for him. And that is the talk of him going to Los Angeles and breaking up, sending either Andrew Bynum or potentially Pau Gasol. One of those guys probably will not be on the team next year.
Yeah, I think it would probably end up being Bynum just because Bynum's significantly younger than Pau Gasol. And I just saw him had a terrible playoff series. He had the worst playoffs of his career. He averages 18 points a game. He didn't score 18 points once in his entire playoffs. And he made some reference to the Fender stuff happening off the courts that affected him on the court. And some rumors about Shmoopies involved. I have no idea what the hell his problem was, but he played terrible. But regardless, I don't think they're going to blow up the team. I know Magic talked about blowing up the team. I just don't know how exactly you can blow up the team and everybody's still in the contract. I mean, Artest is going to come back. Like it or not, the corpse of Fisher is going to be back for another year. So, I mean, while they can go out and get role players, I don't think that they necessarily have what's needed to do a complete overhaul. Unless, of course, they do the one-man overhaul, which would happen if they got Dwight Howard.
That's true. And I have to ask, though, when you, you know, yes, the corpse, the 37-year-old corpse, I think it is, of Derek Fisher is still on that team. There's a heck of a lot of question marks, but my biggest question is, if you send Lamar Odom out of Los Angeles, what's going to happen with the Kardashians?
The ugly one's maybe going to go east. Maybe she can be the princess of Disney World.
I hope. I mean, I get nervous about that, breaking up that show. But speaking of moving to the east, though, there's another series going on, and I'm not talking about the one that's involving the Atlanta Hawks and the MVP-led Derrick Rose-led Chicago Bulls, which, by the way, if you did not see the Derrick Rose MVP press conference, if you did see it and you didn't tear up, then I don't know what's wrong with you. Because frankly, Derrick Rose pretty much, you know, thanked his mom on Mother's Day for making everything possible for him, and it was a tear-jerking moment. But enough about that, Jesse. I want to talk about the Boston Celtics-Miami Heat series, which had a nice shot in the arm, so to speak, in Game 3.
That was – I couldn't believe what I was watching, seriously, when I had that game on. That was almost incomprehensible to me, the way that Rondo was able to come back after his arm, you know, bent the other way. I only saw it once. I saw it the one time, even though they replay about – 15 times since. I only saw it that one time, and it was just unbelievable. I thought for sure his playoffs were done. And with him, I thought the Celtics playoffs were done. And yeah, somehow he was able to put on an Allen Iverson arm sleeve, and then that cures a dislocated elbow. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, right now the MVP of this playoff series is looking like Ed Lacerdy, who's the team trainer.
Ed Lacerdy, yes.
Yeah, I sat down and started watching the game midway through the third quarter when he was just when he came back to the bench. In fact, and Rajon Rondo came back to the bench, and of course I had no idea what was going on because I hadn't seen before that. And they showed the replay, and for some inexplicable reason, I decided that I needed to watch that replay about 7 times. And every time I watched it, I got more and more upset because, yes, if you're Dwayne Wade and you want to talk about the fact that it wasn't a Bush League move or whatever, the replays of that kind of show that, yes, as much as Rajon Rondo is backing up, not necessarily on balance or has full balance, Dwayne Wade put his leg behind him and kind of did a Johnny sweep the leg. Like, there's a reason Rajon Rondo fell and hyperextended his elbow. It's because a gigantic man pushed him and landed on him. And, you know, I'm sorry, LeBron James, but it wasn't retarded. It was Bush League. And physical is one thing, but dirty is a whole different animal.
Like I said, I can't give a legitimate opinion because I only saw the replay once. So I've pretty much been ignoring it the whole rest of the time because I can't watch it because it's just too gross. But the fact that he came back and played in one arm, and he came back and again, I mean, almost as impressive as the fact that he's coming back and he's playing in this game again today. They say after, you know, after the day after, it's always worse than the day it happened. So he's back playing again today in a game that's going into overtime, of course, because I think they just wanted to make this podcast a little more difficult for us.
Absolutely.
I mean, the fact that he was able to come back, I mean, that shows real toughness. That shows tremendous toughness. Basically, he's the anti-Bynum at this point.
Yeah, I think so. But what I think everyone's making mention, though, Jesse, of the fact that Rajon Rondo came back and played the fourth quarter and most of the third quarter with one arm, nobody's talking about the fact that Chris Bosh played 30 minutes without a pair of testicles.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. That, I mean, obviously, he had that statement today, or somebody had it yesterday. He said it.
It was Chris Bosh.
Yeah, he had said that, you know, he was nervous and that basically that the moment got to him. And the thing is, it's kind of funny to me when he said that. First of all, my first thought was, I'm not surprised because I bet that happens to a lot of people, a lot more than are willing to admit it. That was the first thing that got through my head. Second one is, I can't believe you actually just admitted this. Like, even if that's the case, you actually can't say it. But then what drove me crazy is when guys in the media, honestly, they started killing him for it. And over and over and over again, just killing him and questioning everything about him, which to me is completely understandable. But with that, I'm kind of reluctant to kill the guy because to me, at least he was honest. You know, so many times now you hear athletes and they speak in, you know, one of 5 phrases that they get on a sheet of paper that they just use over and over and over again because that's the only thing they know how to say because they're afraid to say anything that's going to get them in trouble. And for once, Chris Bosh actually took a step back and actually said what the truth was. And his reward for actually saying the truth is that he's getting killed. So I'm kind of, you know what I mean? I'm kind of slow to kill the guy for it, even though it would set up warning flags for me if I was a Miami Heat fan.
Yeah, and listen, he's shown tonight so far that as much as he was affected in Game 3, you know, we're looking right now at the beginning of overtime, and Chris Bosh has 15 points to go with 10 rebounds. So clearly the game 2 jitter or the game 4 jitters aren't as bad as the game 3 jitters were, where he's at least been able to play through it. You know, beginning of overtime, we have LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade as the big 3, as opposed to what it's been like for the most of the rest of the series, the big 3, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and James Jones.
Or Joel Anthony.
Or Joel Anthony, yeah. Not a heck of a lot out of Big Z, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, or former friend of the show and former friend of the Celtics, Eddie House. I'm not sure where he's been. I don't think he played at all in Game 3.
No, I mean, he played a little bit today, but he's not seeing a whole lot of minutes.
No, but I think, you know, my question, though, is, so right now we obviously see the fact that the Celtics are going into overtime with the Heat, and I'm sure again it'll be another fun experiment for the two of us to go through this game for the overtime now. But I want to move into our email of the week.
Sure.
Email of the week this week comes from Phil in Los Angeles, California.
Okay, Phil.
Yeah, Phil has plenty of time on his hands now. Congratulations, Phil, from Los Angeles, California. You've won a $25 gift certificate to Prospector's Steakhouse and Saloon in glorious suburban Philadelphia, Jesse. I don't know if you've ever been to Prospector's Steakhouse and Saloon.
I have not. I was unaware that we had a saloon in the area.
Yeah, Prospector's Steakhouse and Saloon on Route 38 in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Come for our 25-foot salad bar.
That's a large salad bar.
Yeah, I mean, I got to check that out. But congratulations, Phil. I know you're I don't know too much about you, Phil, but if you're a Buddhist or a vegetarian or something. But if I were, I'd be pretty excited about a 25-foot salad bar.
Yeah, I don't know. Who doesn't appreciate that kind of salad bar?
I don't know who wouldn't. So congratulations to Phil for winning our email of the week. Phil asks, now that the Lakers can go back to their day jobs as record producers, Ron Artest, reality TV stars, Lamar Odom, and male strippers, Andrew Bynum, who looks the strongest to win the NBA championship?
My initial thought is whoever ends up winning this game that's currently going on as we're recording this, of course, by the time people are listening, they will have already known who wins the Miami-Boston game, and actually we will know by the time this is over. But I think whoever comes out with this game is going to have either it's going to be a 2-2 or a 3-1 lead. And whoever comes out of the Miami-Boston series, I think, has to be the favorite going forward.
Yeah, Jesse, I tend to agree with you. My concern, though, is that this game, we've already seen Game 3, a pretty physical game. Game 4 shaping up to be a little physical as well, as Paul Pierce just falls on the ground. I got to think, though, that a lot of these guys are going to be playing, you know, beat up coming the next round of the series. And frankly, as much as I hate to say it, as much as we've been joking around before, the Dallas Mavericks look damn good. The shooting, the three-point performance that they put on, and the fact that they just absolutely blew the Los Angeles Lakers smoked them in the first two games, and then last night absolutely blew them out of their home gym with smug Mark Cuban watching. I have to say, I don't really see that Memphis or Oklahoma City putting up too much of a resistance for Dallas as long as Dallas is shooting well. And if they do continue to shoot well and absolutely are on fire from the three-point range, I don't know how they're not going to win the NBA championship.
Well, first of all, nobody's ever going to shoot like that again, the way they shot. I mean, they have two guys off their bench that combined for 14 of 15 from three. That's absurd. that has never happened before. I would be shocked if it happens again in these playoffs. So I don't expect that to happen. And Dallas absolutely looks great. But they happen to be, you know, we always talk about how, you know, styles make fights in the game of boxing. But this was a matchup that play a huge role in the playoff time in basketball, too. And this was just a terrible matchup for the Lakers because Dallas had what absolutely drives the Lakers crazy, which is multiple point guards who can take their man off the dribble and hurt him. And that's just the way it worked out. So I don't know if they're going to have as much success when they play teams, either Memphis or Oklahoma City, who have point guards that can actually play defense.
That could be. And if Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant manage to get out of this round of the playoffs, then they will be probably a pretty good opponent for them. But I don't know. You've heard it here first. I'm probably the only one out on this ledge that I think that the Dallas Mavericks can win the NBA championship.
Well, yeah, they can win. They're still involved in the tournament, so they can win it. Yes,
I think they will win the NBA championship. And right now, they have the best shot to make the NBA. To win the NBA championship because they're the furthest along out of everyone.
Yeah, I think the Miami Heat is going to win the NBA championship as I did the day LeBron James decided he was going to go there. Because as is the case, 98% of the time, the team with the most talent wins, and they have the most talent. So yeah. If I had to pick, that's what I'm going to pick.
Okay, well, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. But I realize we skipped completely over our second segment, which I guess is fine.
Because
We're kind of moving right along into our three quick takes. So Jesse, as always, I give it to you first for the first quick take.
Quick takes.
All right, my first quick take is unfortunately as an aside, the Celtics have been done, which is too bad right now. Anyway, the Kentucky Derby was this week, and I really like horses. In fact, I dream to own a horse one day in the future. So if you're interested in investing down the road, anybody listening, let me know. I took the Kentucky Derby, actually took a big hit this week when one of the two horses that everyone liked, who actually suggested might have a chance to win a Triple Crown, the horse Uncle Mo, was scratched due to a stomach virus. And the second favorite dialed in, finished a disappointing eighth. So the winner, of course, was a 20-1 long shot of Animal Kingdom, and most experts don't give him any chance whatsoever to win a Triple Crown, which, as I mentioned, is exactly what the horsing game desperately needs. But the real story for me was actually that of the jockeys. See, Robbie Alvarado was picked to ride Animal Kingdom in the Derby. He was supposed to ride him, but on Wednesday, Alvarado, he slipped off a horse that was making its very first career start, and the horse then stepped on Alvarado's face, breaking his nose and making his face look like a complete mess in the process. And because of the broken face, Alvarado decided to play it safe. He took Friday off to make sure he was 100%, you know, to ride in the Derby. But the owners of Animal Kingdom didn't exactly read it this way. They saw the Friday off day as a sign that Alvarado was not quite ready to run in the Derby. So even though Alvarado would run other races on Saturday, Alvarado lost his mount for the Kentucky Derby. He was replaced by the jockey who was supposed to ride Uncle Mo, John Velasquez. So Alvarado had to watch another jockey win the Kentucky Derby on a horse that was supposed to be his. But perhaps worst of all, and kind of cruel actually, the change occurred so late that the official Derby program still lists Alvarado as a jockey. And as a result, some fans who aren't really paying attention to the race, probably had a few too many mint juleps, congratulated Alvarado after the Kentucky Derby for his win.
Oh. Yeah, and that hurts. And as much as you do, I like the ponies as well. And I'm glad at least that the OTB was closed here in New York, because I would have probably lost my shirt. I had Uncle Mo as one of my favorites to win the Derby, or at least place a show. But just to jump on that, speaking of injuries, Arch, which had my favorite name out of all the Derby horses, who I had picked to come in the I would have had part of my trifecta box, finished a sad 15th and is going to be retired after the Kentucky Derby. So looks like I missed the mark on that one. But too bad for congratulations, I guess, to John Velasquez, but that's not a story you definitely would necessarily want to see. But
that sucks for Alvarado.
Yeah. And in fact, actually, I'm looking at the official results on ESPN.com, and Animal Kingdom won the Kentucky Derby, jockeyed by John Velasquez. So at least they, managed to get it right on ESPN.com, even if the programs aren't correct. So good job, Worldwide Leader. Well done on your homework. Jesse, I want to follow up on my quick takes last week. Congratulations to the George Washington University for doing exactly what I thought they were going to do and hired coach Mark Lonergan from the University of Vermont. I bring this up because it happened just 3 days after your friend and mine, Coach Gary Williams from the University of Maryland, announced his retirement surprisingly and pretty much caught the University of Maryland flat-footed. And Maryland then said, well, now we have to start a committee. They decided to start talking to people. And one of the people that they talked to come to the University of Maryland was a former friend of the show, one Brad Stevens from Butler University. Brad Stevens said, no, thank you, I'm all set. They talked to Sean Miller, formerly of Xavier University, who's at the University of Arizona. Sean Miller talked to his friends at Arizona and managed to get a new contract extension out of it. There's nothing I like more than seeing folks at the University of Maryland struggle with their basketball program. Well, Jesse, all that struggling is for naught today, because Texas A&M coach Mark Turgeon accepted an offer from the University of Maryland to replace Gary Williams as the new head coach of the Terrapins. I don't know a lot about Mark Turgeon, but I know Texas A&M is a good football school. I'm not sure that this necessarily trumps the GW signing of Catholic University's own Mark Lonergan, who for some reason, despite having grown up in Bowie, Maryland, is a Red Auerbach fan and wore number 10 because of JoJo White, of all things. But I'm pretty excited I'm pretty excited for the Mark Lonergan era to begin at GW. It's a tumultuous time to be a head coach in Washington, D.C. And Lonergan has said that he's going to be recruiting both in D.C. He's going to be recruiting nationally. He's going to be recruiting internationally. But I hope he does it as soon as his leg heals, having come to the podium today on crutches after having a surgically repaired torn meniscus last month. Not to worry, though. He'll be fine in time for recruiting trips. So I'm excited about that. And I think it's a breath of fresh air to a program that certainly needs it. And in the hopes now that the D.C. area will become a basketball hotbed for college basketball that it used to be a few years ago with Georgetown, Maryland, and George Washington University with Alexander Cool and the gang. That's my first quick take.
Yeah, I honestly don't know anything about the guy. I think it's great that he was a coach at Vermont. You never get enough Catamounts in your program. That's always terrific. But then again, I think it would be an improvement over the last coach if he just had all his players graduate high school.
Actually, yeah, I will say, well, this one thing I learned about Mark Lonergan today. Every player he has ever coached, every player he has ever coached in college basketball has graduated. He has a 100% college graduation rate.
Well, you know that's going to end.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping it doesn't. But, yeah.
So I think Servalian Brown will probably end that.
Yeah, well, that's good news for us. Servalian Brown's college eligibility is over. I'm not sure if he has a brother or a much younger cousin, Sir Lancelot, or something like that. But
yeah,
here's hoping.
Unfortunately, the Celtics are now down 7 points, and they've just lost the game, which is terrific. And adding insult to injury, the Boston Red Sox just blew a save. So I'm excited about life right now.
Anything? The good thing the Bruins aren't playing tonight, though.
They're doing great. All right. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, Jesse, your second quick take.
Quick takes.
My second quick take is after the Derby, I actually tuned into some boxing. That's right. Horse racing and boxing. I would have been an outstanding 1930s sports talk show host. I like all these things. But Manny Pacquiao fought Shane Mosley this weekend, and it was a dominating performance by Manny Pacquiao. Put Mosley on his back in the third round and completely took away Mosley's entire will to win. And Mosley spent the entire rest of the fight running away from Pacquiao. You know, Mosley decided that he couldn't win the fight, so he was just determined to survive 12 rounds and cash in a very healthy paycheck. Of course, people afterwards have criticized Pacquiao for what turned out to be an incredibly boring and lame fight. This criticism, though, is completely ridiculous. As I said last week, we're talking about GSP. When you are the champ, your only job is to win the fight. And in addition, the judges gave Mosley 108 points for the fight. Now, I'm not a math major, but I'm pretty sure that among 12 rounds, that means Pacquiao won every single round. So the champ comes in and wins every single round, and then people are going to, you know, slam him and bash him because of the way the fight was boring. And they said a lot of people have criticized because of how boring it was Pacquiao's performance. Not me. I'm going to personally blame the boring fight on the guy that ran away for 12 rounds.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Jesse. As you know, I've never been a huge boxing fan, but one thing I do know about boxing is the first Latino heavyweight champion of the world, the quiet man, John Ruiz. And if there's anything John Ruiz knows about boxing, it's hugging. Boxing is hugging.
That's right.
It's pretty awkward to watch a John Ruiz fight because it's a lot of dancing, it's a lot of holding, and it's a lot of how long can I lean on you and hope that you don't have to punch me and I don't have to punch you. Without having seen the fight, but having heard a lot about it and having read a lot of reports that were written about it, it seemed like it was a similar tactic taken by Sugar Shane Mosley. And frankly, I can't say that I blame him. And to your point, I can't blame Pacquiao for not wanting to go out there and to bruise my fists and continue to try to punch him. Yes, at some points where Pacquiao, where Mosley got a few good shots in on Pacquiao, Pacquiao came to him and he absolutely brought the thunder and he had him on the ropes and he had him on his back and he had him reeling. Could he have finished the fight in the 9th or 10th round? Absolutely. But to your point, why would you? Why would you risk having Mosley get one or two good shots in you and when you don't need to do that in order to win this fight? The rules of boxing are simple. Don't lose the fight. Don't get knocked on your ass. Manny Pacquiao did that, and he's still the champ, and I don't see how you can fault him.
Yeah, well, there's no way Manny Pacquiao is going to lose this fight. It's pretty clear that Mosley couldn't really hurt him. But the fact is, I mean, you got a Hall of Fame boxer who's never been knocked out in his entire career, who was just completely determined. I mean, he said it himself. He basically admitted to it after the fight, that he knew he couldn't win. So he was just determined to go the distance and collect his paycheck. And when you have a guy who's in there and taking that kind of approach, there's really not a whole hell of a lot you can do.
No. Jesse, my second quick take has to do with the NHL playoffs, which we neglected to talk about today. But, Jesse, I'm not even riding the bandwagon at this point. I am driving the Boston Bruins playoffs bandwagon. In fact, I'm driving the Boston Bruins playoff bandwagon, and riding shotgun with me is the ghost of Fred Cusick.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Boston Garden.
It is a great time to be a Boston sports fan. I mean, I guess unless you're a Red Sox fan. But it is a great time to be a Boston sports fan in the playoffs. It's a great time to be a Bruins fan. And frankly, if anyone is going to win an MVP award, a playoff MVP award anytime soon, it's going to be Tim Thomas. And I want to talk for a second about Tim Thomas. The Bruins have had not a lot of luck with the goaltending. I remember playing in Little League and having a kid on my team named Ryan Lemelin, whose father, Regine Lemelin, or Reggie,
that's awesome,
was the backup goalie for the Boston Bruins. Now, Brian Lemelin, and I'm sure he listens to this podcast, because God knows I haven't spoken to the kid in 20 years. Brian Lemelin walked around like his S did not stink. You know what? I'll say it. Brian Lemelin walked around like his ish didn't stink, because it was so much fun last week to beep out the fact that Dwayne Wade was LeBron's mom. Oh, good. Now that's two of them I can do it. That's Delonte West, by the way. But Brian Lemelin walked around like his poop didn't stink because his dad was Reggie Lemelin. And Reggie Lemelin, in his own right, was not a bad goaltender. But he was the Tuukka Rask of that team. Andy Moog, by far, was the headliner. He was the guy that people came to see. You had Ray Bourque, you had Cam Neely, and you had Andy Moog. Those were the guys on the Bruins that drove those Bruins teams to the mid-80s and allowed them to make it deep into the playoffs and make it to the Stanley Cup Finals. I see a lot of that now with Tim Thomas. This is a guy who is carrying this team. Yes, you have great players in Milan Lucic and in Nate Horton and in Johnny Boychuk, a lot of guys who are very young. And you have the grizzled veterans with, I guess you could even call Zdeno Chara a grizzled veteran. Mark Recchi also, a grizzled veteran. The cornerstone, the baseline, the foundation of this team starts and ends with Tim Thomas. And he has absolutely performed brilliantly. If he does not win the Vezina Trophy, I don't know what's going to happen, because this man has absolutely been standing on his head. He's been playing phenomenal goal. He's been a phenomenal goaltender when he needs to. I think he had something like 52 saves in Game 3. And if he does not carry them to the NHL Finals, then I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to take a bit of a miracle. And again, I am driving this bandwagon. Fred Cusick sitting next to me.
Shot score!
And I'm pretty sure we've got Derek Sanderson riding in the back.
Down once again.
That's terrific. I'm actually super excited. I'm definitely super excited about the Boston Bruins. I was talking to my buddy Al Gonzalez, who we made a reference to before. And I think of all the Boston teams, the one I want to win most right now is the Bruins. That's the one I'm most rooting for to win the next championship, simply, even though they're the fourth of the four teams as far as the degree to which I follow them. It's been such a long time since they've won in comparison to the other three, so I'd really like to see them win. To be honest, though, I am super concerned about the concussion suffered by, I think, the most valuable player on the team, not named Tim Thomas. That's Patrice Bergeron, terrific two-way player. He wins, like, every single face-off you want him to win. He's just a great overall, all-around hockey player, and he's got a concussion. He's got a major history with concussion, so I would not be surprised if we don't see him back. So if he's not on the ice, they could be in some trouble.
Yeah, and we here at Past Their Prime wish him the best, and he's hoping that he will be able to take the ice for Game 1 of that series against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I've been to Tampa. You've been to Tampa. Water doesn't freeze in Tampa. There should not be hockey in Tampa.
Yeah. If water never freezes in a town, if your town never actually sees snow, you should not have a hockey team.
I'm with you on that one. Jesse, your third and final quick take.
Quick takes.
My third and final quick take is about Rashard Mendenhall, running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He actually got himself in some trouble this week for some stupid tweets. He tweeted basically said he questioned the celebration at the death of Osama bin Laden, said something to the effect of having to look at it from both sides, as though this was some type of principal debate. And yeah, he also doubted whether two planes could actually bring down the Twin Towers. And clearly, Rashard Mendel's statements are completely ridiculous, and he completely deserved to lose his endorsement deals with Champion. But what annoyed me this whole thing is actually, it's almost just as stupid. There are all these people who come out and claim that the First Amendment right to free speech should prevent Mendenhall from losing his endorsement deals or even losing his job for that matter. Of course, they have no idea what the blue hell they're talking about. The First Amendment does not prevent you from losing your job. What it does is it makes sure that Rashard Mendenhall will not be thrown in jail for what he said on his tweet. Therein lies a big difference. He certainly can and perhaps should lose his job for what he said in those tweets, which were completely stupid. And as an organization, the Pittsburgh Steelers, I do think, will take steps to rectify the situation once the holdout is over.
Yeah, though that's a big point number one. He's actually not right now employed by the Pittsburgh Steelers. But, I saw that as well. And listen, we have a Twitter feed for this show, in case you don't follow it. It's _ past their prime. You can follow us on Twitter. We do not generally talk about Osama bin Laden or even Rashard Mendenhall, because he doesn't play along the I-95 corridor. But I want to bring up something President Obama said during a 60 Minutes interview. Justice was done, and I think that anyone who would question that the perpetrator of mass murder on American soil didn't deserve what he needs to get to have their head examined. Maybe Rashard Mendenhall has just been helmet-to-helmet contact too much. He may have concussions or something. But not to make light of that, I agree with you 100%. Yes, absolutely. If you're in the public and you say things like that, you really need to watch what you're saying. I have no problem with you having that opinion. Just keep it to yourself and don't put it out on Twitter. It's almost like putting your hand over your face, even though you have an open microphone, and telling a reporter that their question is retarded.
Yeah, see, generally, I've disagreed a lot with Kurt Schilling, but I like it when athletes at least let me know that they've read a newspaper, once in their life. I actually like that every once in a while when they do. But just they have to understand, as the entire world has to understand, if you put something out there, there are consequences. And I just think the ignorance of a lot of these people who are defending him by saying that he can't be fired, he should sue Champion for getting rid of him, for Champion violating his First Amendment rights to free speech, that is just completely and utterly wrong. And a lot of times it's said, and nobody bothers to correct these idiots who make that statement.
Well, Jesse, not all of us are congressional lawyers.
Is that what I am?
I don't know. You
I
must be.
Yeah, sitting in Philly doing a podcast.
That could be it too. Anyway, Jesse, I want to move into my third quick take. I know we need a researcher for this show. I know the guy's a little temperamental. I know sometimes he gets a little angry with his bosses. But Jesse, if you can put together $13 million, Milton Bradley is available to be a researcher on our show. Sadly, for the Seattle Mariners, who were desperately in need of some offense, slumping Milton Bradley was cut today, Monday, leaving the temperamental outfielder yet again looking for a job. They had asked General Manager Jack I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name. It begins with a Z and a D. Those are two consonants that should be together. Was quoted as saying, "It was not a particular incident. It was just an issue with our evaluations of where we are and where we are going, and our estimates were that he did not fit. That's why the decision was made." Asked if Bradley had a negative effect on the clubhouse, he had said, "That's hard to say. I don't know that. I think it gets down to more what we're trying to accomplish and where we're headed." Well, I'm glad you've got your talking points and you're sticking to them. Fact of the matter is, this is a guy who has been, and I hate to use the word clubhouse cancer, but this is a guy who has just been a bad seed. I'm pretty sure he's the same guy that went up to the booth a few years ago to yell at a broadcaster when he heard the broadcaster was talking about him. I would hope that he would get his, get his act together, but clearly it's not going to be in Seattle. And hey, we're here for people who are past their prime, and Milton Bradley, I think you might be past their prime.
Yeah, think he, I also think he qualifies. Yeah, the one thing about Milton Bradley, sometimes he hits, but all the time he's crazy. That's what you get with Milton Bradley.
Yeah, I mean, I know that the spot for researcher currently, we have another candidate in Carl Everett. But he may be having difficulty getting a work visa, having held a gun to his wife's head. So, crazy researchers, we've got them in abundance here at Past Their Prime.
That's right. See Everett Kook.
See Everett Kook. He's a friend of the curly-haired boyfriend.
That's right.
Jesse, that's all the time we have, unfortunately, this week for Past Their Prime. Before we finish the show, I want to remind everyone that you too can be a part of this show by emailing us at PastTheirPrime@gmail.com. Again, you can follow us on Twitter at _PastTheirPrime. Please subscribe to this show on iTunes and tell iTunes exactly what you think, or at the very least, give us 5 stars so we can have enough ratings to start appearing on things. You can find us as part of the I-95 Guys Network, which has been a bustling blog of sorts as of late. You got a lot of Mets fans there who are fairly excited the fact that the Mets were making a run. And I think they're even more excited that they broke up Andre Ethier's hitting streak the other day. That's pretty much all the excitement that's happening in Flushing these days. But you can follow that blog along with our podcast on the I95guys.com. That's pretty much all I've got left to plug this week. Jesse, I don't know, anything else for you?
Yeah, just that we promise to come back even stronger next week, as we will not be, hopefully won't be distracted by a Celtic team choking like 4 dogs.
That definitely had an impact in the post podcast press conference. We'll definitely have to address that. not exactly sure what happened there, but for Jesse Martineau, this is Lee Laborski. Thanks so much for listening, and as Jesse said, we will do better next week. So long, everyone.
Yeah, Capicola is the best.